Good morning. Welcome to Rochester Speaks. I'm Bethany B. And joining me today is Scout Executive of Seneca Waterways Council, Stephen Hoy. Hi, Stephen. Hey, how are you?
Great. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yes, thanks for joining me. So let's just jump right in. What is 21 Stories for Scouts?
Yeah, so 21 Stories for Scouts is an extreme descent rappelling event that we do to raise money for our kids in our inner city, mostly inner city scouting program. Kids that really couldn't afford otherwise to be in scouting, this helps us raise money to give them a chance to have that program, same like any other kid.
You're with Seneca Waterways Council. What is that?
Yeah, so the Boy Scouts of America have several programs under its umbrella, and then to administer those programs, they divide into councils. So there's about 244 councils in the country. So we serve Monroe, Wayne, Ontario, Seneca, and Yates counties. In that five-county area, we really run, what, four different programs. So we run Cub Scouting, which is, you know, little kids in blue uniforms that people see in parades. And then, and that's really for kindergartners up through about fifth grade. And then we run a Scouts BSA program. They used to call it Boy Scouts of America, but that sole program went to Scouts BSA 2 years ago, and that's for boys and girls, really age 11 through 18. And then we run two co-ed teenage programs for high school students, 14 to 21, which is Venturing and Exploring. Venturing is kind of that outdoor high adventure program. Exploring is more a career development program. If you think police cadets or fire cadets, they're probably explorers. And so we run all four of those programs here, and collectively about 6,000 kids post-COVID are in that program. We were closer to 8,000 pre-COVID, but we're hoping to get right back to that number here with this new school year coming up next year.
Yes, let's hope. Fingers crossed things go back to normal. Were you a Boy Scout as well?
I was. I grew up in the program in New Hampshire, and then about 13 years ago, got invited to come to Rochester to be their CEO. And then this was one of the first events we started when I got here.
And so each year, you get 100 plus volunteers the opportunity to rappel.
Absolutely. So we started actually here, and we're in First Federal Plazas, for those that I guess didn't know, for the radio broadcast. And this was the first place we worked with for a building.
Oh, wow.
And so you got to rappel the 309 feet down the outside of the building. And for the first 5 or 6 years or so, maybe 7 years, we did it here at First Federal Plaza. And then the people involved really want an opportunity. Let's try a new building. What's something to be different? And so we moved over to Kodak Tower, and the people there have been absolutely phenomenal as well. I mean, both buildings, great hosts. And it gives individuals the opportunity, like I said, to rappel down the outside of the building. It's kind of, it's an adrenaline rush event, which is why we love it. But also, it really exemplifies what we do in scouting. You know, that adrenaline rush we get rappelling down the outside of a building isn't much different than a 12-year-old at a climbing wall at camp. So for a chance, you get to be a 12-year-old kid again.
And it's all for a good cause.
Again, all helps raise money for kids that couldn't afford the program otherwise.
And I'll actually be rappelling my first time.
Absolutely. That'd
I'm
be
a
great.
Little nervous, but I'm also excited.
Well, I always tell people it's the best Facebook photo you'll ever get. Even doing it here, we partnered with all the sponsors that come together. Kodak Alaris has been a great partner for us with that, even though kind of they're split away from Kodak. But they kind of do that, what I call that flume ride experience. So as you rappel, they're taking your photo all the way down through. And so when you get done with the rappelling experience, you kind of get that photo collage of what it looks like. And then Kodak's side of the house actually gives us these 360-degree cameras that will mount to your helmet. And
wow.
So they'll give you a video of the experience as well, because one of the biggest complaints we got from people when rappelling here was that, you know, I was so focused on the mechanics of the rappel and the things you learn when you go through the training that because I never took the time to stop and look around and enjoy the view. So the video helps capture some of that for you.
Yeah, I bet that's how I'm going to be too, just focused on being safe and rappelling.
Oh, a lot of people are, right?
The event has been over 12 years with over about 1,400 Brave volunteers. So how much have you raised over those 12
years? Yeah, so collectively we're over $1 million now.
Wow.
That we've done each year. I think probably 120, 140,000 has been our best year net ever on the event. But the in the first couple of years were rough getting started because, you know, people are like, you're crazy. But it's sort of developed a following, which has been great. And it raises about $100,000 a year now for us.
Amazing.
And so this being our 13th year, we had to just kind of do Friday the 13th. You know, it's inevitable. It's been a May event traditionally, locally, and sooner or later we're going to just hit that Friday event. But it's been, so we're happy to kind of do that on the 13th year. And hopefully they'll make it exciting, even more exciting. It gets people who like to market it something to play with.
But. Yes. And it's May 13th, right?
It is May 13th. So the general public gets rappel on May 13th. We have a whole bunch of media people, yourself included, that'll rappel the night before. So, and that'll be on the Thursday, the 12th.
And what for Friday the 13th, what is the time of the event?
So normal time is 9 to, really, it's like 9 to 4:30 rappel times, but before we even announced the event publicly, we had already sold out from prior year friends and family. And so with that, we extended the day. We worked with a company that we hire called Over the Edge. They're out of Canada that does this events all over the country. And they were able to give us, you know, a little more staff so we could extend the day for a couple extra hours to give us more spaces. So we still have about 15 spaces left for people that still want to get in on it. Depending on weather, and because it's May, we're always hesitant, and we're not sure if we're going to start. It'll be weather depending. Do we start at 7 or do we try to push it to 6? Afternoon thunderstorms don't bode well for the event, so if we're in a weather forecast that doesn't look great, we'll start earlier in the morning.
I hope the weather is good. Have you ever dealt with that in the past?
We have had thunderstorms on media day, and we've had high winds on repeller day. Thunderstorms kind of come and go through, and so we just kind of delay. High winds just make it pretty difficult, and so they'll usually end up being a longer delay, or we'll repel the next day. We've never had to come back on Saturday and repel. We have as a backup, but we've had to have to take a couple hour delays just because of weather.
Let's hope it's decent weather.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't, I mean, really, you know, the company that we work with is great, and they're really focused on the safety and the mechanics of it. And so if anything gets in the way, you know, our fault, nature, whatever, you know, they're going to delay it just so we make sure we create that safe environment.
How did the event first begin?
So, you know, just as the same time I had arrived to be the new CEO, the councils had just merged. So, like I said, there was 244-ish councils in the country, and they had just merged Rochester and Geneva Boy Scout councils together. And they were kind of rolling out new fundraising ideas, new products. And one of the ideas that they had clamped onto was this Over the Edge company in Nova Scotia that was doing these extreme descent rappelling events. So it was still kind of on the idea stage, still coming together when I came on board. And then we kind of moved forward with it, and a great team of volunteers that were ready to go to make that happen. And like I said, one of the reasons we just love it, it exemplifies what we do in scouting. I mean, that adrenaline rush that, you know, you get to be a kid again, a kind of experience. And for a lot of us, you know, whether we repelled here or Kodak or both places, it's just a chance to be that kid, have that great experience. And then really have just kind of, most people don't get to experience that adrenaline rush kind of setting. And it's kind of cool.
Did you repel?
I did. I did it here on year two. First of all, I haven't done Kodak Tower simply because we have sold out every year. Mm. And so we've kind of said to staff, you know, we're like, I'll do it next year kind of thing. And it keeps selling out. So that's kind of a good thing. But sooner or later, I'll sneak back in.
You've done it once. So that's good at least.
Yeah. And I'd say a good number of the repellers come back and say, I'll do it again. Other people who are kind of afraid of heights and are kind of really pushing the envelope or said, okay, I've done it. I'm not going to do it again. You know, you kind of the lines. But we've also kind of figured out boundaries. You know, if you're one of those people, like here at First Federal, there's a glass elevator. I don't know if you've ridden in that yet or not. But when they're used to be a restaurant up top, we used to be a rotating restaurant, they did have the glass elevator that you could take up to the restaurant. And if you got the kind of the EBGBs going up the glass elevator, yeah, you're probably not the type of person that wants to do this rappelling event. And so we have tried pushing the envelope a couple times with people, and we said, you know, people who have extreme phobias for heights, yeah, this isn't the way to kind of come over that.
But it's all safe.
It's absolutely. And we, like I said, the great thing about Over the Edge group that we bring on board, you know, they bring the helmets, the carabiners, the safety harnesses, ropes, everything we do, a trained team. You know, when people come in, they're going to get suited up. They get in a harness system, a carabiner system, which they kind of design exclusively for events like this. And then once you get geared up, you go into training. And you don't leave training until you're 100% confident in the material. And so they set up a giant tripod system in kind of the boardroom at Kodak. And from there, you really learn how to use the rappelling apparatus. And some people are in there 5 minutes, some people are in there 20. But you won't leave there until you completely handle it. And what I found was training was actually more difficult than the building itself. Because it's just they want to make sure you understand the equipment and how you're going to do it.
Which makes me feel comfortable that there is training. So I'll be confident when I'm rappelling, you know what to do and everything.
Yeah, and then you got coaches on the roof that are working with you, and you're so focused on mechanics, the distractions of the photographers say, you know, turn left and smile, say cheese or all that. That's kind of takes your mind off the moment. And by the time you realize where you're at, you're already 15 feet into the process. And the rappel is actually pretty easy. It's kind of that first step that's kind of the most nerve-wracking. But
how long does it take to rappel?
Well, it depends on the person. We've had people do it quickly in like 10 minutes. 7 minutes, I think, is about the fastest you can do it. We've had other people go 40. One of the things from the safety standpoint the group does is they put a speed brake on the rappelling system. So that if you've seen photos of it, there's actually two ropes in the rappel. The second rope has a speed brake on it. So you can't do these like military kind of jump off in three touches and hit the ground. It just won't let you go that fast. And so the system will lock up. And you, in training, you'll learn how to unlock the device and continue rappel. So it prevents you from going too fast. And so about 7 minutes is about the fastest you can get down.
Now, is it just one person to rappel at a time, or is it multiple people?
So we'll have two ropes. So depending on how it works, you may be by yourself because you may be starting on, let's say, rope one while a person is finishing on rope two. There's never more than one person on the rope at a time. But if you were the first propeller of the day, let's say, you might be starting out with somebody else on the other rope at the exact same time. And we do get some, you know, parent-child, father-son, mother-daughter kind of experiences where they'll come, they want to go together, and we'll accommodate that so that we'll start together and kind of go together.
Yeah. Family experience.
Yeah, and we've had a lot of receiving people that have come back for the second or third experience, and now they want to do it with their spouse or their child, and that's great. And then the two ropes let us accommodate that so that we can kind of have that team experience. And we also get companies that go in teams. We'll have probably half our repellers now are teams, and they'll come in at six team members, and they'll go in three groups of two.
Great team bonding right there.
Well, it's a great way to kind of, some companies use it for recognition for their team members. Other companies just do it as an incentive, fun thing to get out and do, a way to recognize it. Other companies kind of share it, some employees, some clients, but it's been just a great way. I mean, it's not a golf tournament, that's for sure.
No.
So it's a great experience to get out and do something fun.
Why do people participate in this event?
I'd say, you know, half the people probably come in the door. They're here to raise money for scouting and really do something great in the community and do it a different way. But the other people coming in, they're happy to raise money for scouts. They're here for that adrenaline rush, that Facebook photo. For us, it's getting about telling the scouting story and all the great things that scouting does, from, you know, character development, pushing outside your comfort zone, but also leadership development, what scouting does to really help bring kids from kind of those, you know, an awkward, you know, pre-teenager to kids who go about and, you know, really give leadership in our community and do great things.
And it's great, too, because if you can rappel, you can do anything. I feel like, kind of feel like a superhero.
you do a little bit. And we do it at camp, not to this extent. You know, a 30-foot climbing wall is nothing compared to this. But it's one of those things, you know, it's really about the experience, really pushing yourself to try things new, to do things you've just never done before.
Is there an age requirement for rappelling?
There's not, but you have to be, just laws of gravity, you have to weigh more than the rope below you, or else you don't go down. So with that, you've got to be at least 100 pounds. So we've always said 14 is kind of really the threshold. We've taken kids younger than that. It's a little bit about arm strength. The mechanic on the rappel, one of the carabiners, it's a lever mechanism. It used to be a squeeze mechanism, but now it's a lever mechanism. And then you pull a lever to release tension on the rope that allows you to descend. Well, after a while, you work this lever back and forth, you know, your biceps will be killing you.
Do I need to exercise more?
You don't, but we found out with real little kids, it's very difficult. And so if you don't weigh, you know, if you don't weigh 100 pounds, we'd have to put like weights or something on you to get you to be able, like, you know, diving weights or something. But really, you know, a 13-year-old, if they're a little bit bigger, stronger, probably could do it. We've left that to kind of parent judgment. But as a guideline, we've kind of said 14 is probably a good round number.
Is anything new this year?
Yeah, so really back into May. For us, that's really the biggest schedule. Kind of nice thing to get back into the season and back to some sense of normalcy for us. And it was a great event to be able to do. We did it every year through COVID, which was kind of cool.
Oh,
but,
wow.
But on the other hand, social distancing is not really a problem when you're on the side of a building, right? It's pretty much a solo experience. So from that perspective, it wasn't that hard to do, but it was hard to kind of keep it in May as COVID transpired. So we're kind of happy to have it back onto its regular schedule, and hopefully that'll allow us to continue on this May timeframe moving forward.
When you did it in 2020 during like the height of the pandemic, were the numbers volunteers lower, or how did that work?
No, we actually sold out in every year during both 20 and 21, which was, you know, you would think that, you know, we probably wouldn't have. And it took a little more work, and we had punted the event to August that first year, just because, you know, none of us knew where COVID was going to take us. We figured, by August, we'll all be free. And surprise, we weren't. And with that, though, we still had people, you know, they want to get out, they want to do things, they want to go, you know, outdoors, you know, just like we see in real life, you know, people are out, you know, they're camping. They're doing outdoor activities more. They want to get out. And so this was a way for a lot of people to get out during that COVID environment. And we're happy to accommodate it, even though it was only one day.
But you're still social distance too, so.
It's plenty of social distancing, yeah. I mean, and for people who are kind of Rochesterians who, you know, grew up here, the families worked in Kodak, the other thing kind of neat about the experience is you get to go into the inner sides of Kodak and kind of walk through the building and, you know, rappel up the 19th floor. And it, to some extent, some of those floors are almost a step back in time. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of cool to get to walk through the Kodak building a little bit and see, you know, what the old boardrooms look like and stuff like that.
It'll be so unique to see. I can't wait. How many spots are remaining for people to volunteer to rappel?
Yeah, so we got about 15 spots left. So, and they'll probably sell out we'd probably predict by three quarters of the way through April, hopefully we'll be sold out. Definitely, hopefully by the time we get to May, but we never know. We always seem to have rappellers for family life gets in the way, real life gets in the way, and they'll have to change and reschedule. So it seems every year we seem to have two or three rappellers who something came up, I can't rappel this year, can I take a spot next year? And that, so you never know. And I would say even if you're finding out about it and it's late in the schedule, you know, we're still, you know, first couple of days of May or whatever, you still can, you know, try to sign up and see if you can get in, because there might still be possibilities. And probably the best thing to do for anybody who's listening who really wants to get involved is go to the website. Which is 21storiesforscouts.org. That's a numerical 21. You can go to that website, 21storiesforscouts.org. And there you can sign up to Repel. You can sign up to sponsor Repeller. It's $1,100 to Repel, but most of our Repellers come in at trying to get pledges. And so they're like kind of, you think like a walkathon or something like that. And so they're getting sponsors to help raise that money. They'll put down a personal gift and hopefully get a whole bunch of people to match them. And so there's still people out there who are looking to get to that $1,100 threshold. And so if you're looking just to help support the cause, you can go look for a pal that hasn't quite got there yet and sponsor him or her. We have both adults as well as scouts who are out there looking to do this. So that'd be a great way to help. But if you want to repel, you can sign up there as well.
There's a wait list too, right?
So we will, because like I said, we'll always have people, like I said, real life gets in the way. Yeah. And who want to bump to next year. So even if we get to a point where it fills, we'll create the wait list and then we'll have people who can move in from there.
And how will the event proceeds support scouting locally?
Yeah, so all the money we raise stays here. So that's kind of the neat thing about the Boy Scouting environment is that we pay services, we buy share services with other councils. We kind of do that through our national. All the money we really raise stays here to help support scouting locally. So with that, everything we get in will help go to support uniforms, books, camperships for kids that go to camp. In our inner city, we spend money to help support, you know, staff who actually run scouting programs. Because we just, in the inner city, it's very difficult to get continuity of leadership. So we'll have, you know, team members go in and run that. And so between support for those programs and the after school with different other charter partners that we run in the city, but even our rural communities, we'll find we're still giving out camperships and resources to help those families as well. And we tend to forget at times that but some of the communities in our Finger Lakes know they need our support as much as they do in the inner city. And so we're happy to provide that program. And this is the largest event we do all year to really raise money to help support kids in those low-income environments.
And this is only once a year you do this,
We right? do it just once a year, yeah.
The $1,100 that go towards repelling or that they can raise, that all goes towards scouting locally, right?
It does. I mean, from the event, all the money we raise, we get to pay the Over the Edge company for the fees because they don't do it for free. But so all that has to go to them. And we couldn't do this without them. There is a piece of the experience. So if someone said, hey, I'm going to just write the check for $1,100. I want the experience. The tax deductible portion would be less because obviously the IRS has rules about personal experience. And so you can't take a deduction for that. But it's still over half of the money per repeller that comes in is still coming to us.
For anyone who wants to participate or people to get involved, tell the website one more time for them to sign up.
Yeah, that's 21storiesforscouts.org. That's a numerical 21. So if you go to 21storiesforscouts.org, you can get more information to sign up. You can sponsor repellers. You can put in a wait list if we fill up or even get being flagged for next year.
Is there a number that people can call as well?
Yeah, so you could always call our office at 244-4210. There's a whole bunch of people on our development team. They'll work with whomever. And I'd also share, you know, if you have a son or daughter who's interested in scouting, there's always opportunity to reach out. That's another great resource is you can just call our office at 244-4210. And we're happy to make an introduction for a scout program in your community.
You learn a lot with like Boy Scouts. I was a Girl Scout and I learned so much like with camping, starting a fire, little things like that.
Yeah, it's all about life skills. And really, for us, it's been a great opportunity to make meaningful change in kids and things that they just don't learn in school or any other place. And you think about, you know, basic life skills, everything from just cooking to campfire, emergency survival, wilderness survival, emergency preparedness, those kind of things, all different life skills, but also leadership development. And that's kind of the magic that I watch, you know, as a parent. You know, having gone through the program, you probably don't realize it as much as a parent watching your child go through. But, you know, to watch that 11-year-old come into a scout meeting and they're doing activities with 16, 15-year-olds and say, you know, they're going to get killed in games or whatever. And then they just sort of work through the program. They do activities. And that magic sort of comes alive. Or also one day they're 14, they're running the show, they're organizing it, they're giving direction to other kids, they're planning ceremonies or events or meetings. And you're like, wow, my little 11-year-old just grew up. And it's amazing just to watch that transformation happen in scouting.
And as a kid, you don't realize how much you're learning because it's all fun.
Yeah, exactly. And Ben Powell, who started scouting, really said, you know, scouting is nothing more than a game with a purpose. And there's really a purpose behind everything we do, which is that character development, leadership perspective. From a kid's perspective, it's about having fun. It's from the adult perspective, it's about really teaching skills and life lessons through fun activities.
One more time, when is the date of repelling and the website one more time?
Yeah, so it's Friday, May 13th. For those that want to repel or sponsor Repeller, you can always come down and watch too if you're just sponsoring. And if you want to go to the website, it's 21storiesforscouts.org, numerical 21, 21storiesforscouts.org, and get more information about all of the above.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Stephen, for joining me today.
Absolutely my pleasure. Thank you for having me.